Blog Talk Radio.
He went on to establish a career, though,
in both stand-up comedy and feature film acting. He was also known for his improvisational skills as well. After his film debut in the musical comedy Popeye in 1980, he starred or co-starred in widely acclaimed films, including the comedy drama The World According to Gart in 1982, a war comedy Good Morning Vietnam, starring that in 1987, and in dramas like Dead Poets Society, also in 1989, and Awakenings in 1990. So he's a busy man. He had quite a bit to do, it appears like. Another one he starred in was comedy drama The Fisher King in 1991, the animated musical fantasy Aladdin in 1992, and I remember seeing that movie in the theaters. Another drama, Good Will Hunting in 1997, and psychological thriller, One-Hour Photo in 2002, as well as financial successes such as the fantasy adventure film Hook in 1991, a comedy, Mrs. Doubtfire, everybody knows that, from 1993, fantasy adventure Jumanji in 1995, 1 year after I graduated high school, that is, and comedy The Birdcage in 1996, and fantasy adventure comedy Night at the Museum in 2006. So he was, like I said, this guy was busy. How could he have any time to think about anybody else? But that's not what Robin Williams was. At least, that's not the legacy he would leave. But in 1998, Williams won the Academy Award for Best Supporting Actor for his performance as Dr. Sean McGuire in Good Will Hunting. He also received 2 Primetime Emmy Awards, 6 Golden Globe Awards, 2 Screen Actors Guild Awards, and 4 Grammy Awards throughout his career, and was inducted as a Disney Legend in 2009. Now, I would have to say that has something to do with the Walt Disney Company, because, in short, he did works for them. Now, let's just tip on his childhood for a minute, Williams. As was born at St. Luke's Hospital in Chicago, Illinois. His mother, Laurie McLaurin, who lived from 1922 to 2001, is a former model from Jackson, Mississippi, whose great-grandfather was Mississippi Senator and Governor Ansel J. McLaurin, Williams' father, Robert Fitzgerald Williams, was a senior executive in Ford Motor Company's Lincoln Mercury division. How about that? Williams had 2 elder half-brothers, Robert and McLaurin. While his mother was a practitioner of Christian Science, Williams was raised as a Mercury... Wait a minute, I just read the same line over again. Williams was raised as an Episcopalian... Well, if I said that right, means I'm using too many words as I'm reading. But during a TV interview on the Inside Actors Studio in 2001, he credited his mother as being an important early influence for his sense of humor, noting also that he tried to make her laugh to gain attention. Now, what kind of child would not do that these days? Now, let's talk about his college and Juilliard School. After high school graduation, Williams enrolled at Claremont Men's College in Claremont, California to study political science. He later dropped out to pursue acting. I think he made a wise choice. Williams then studied theater for 7 years at the College of Marin and Community College in Kentfield, California. According to Marin drama professor James Dunn, the depth of Williams' talent first became evident when he was the cast in the musical Oliver as Fagin. I remember that musical in school, as far back as when I lived in Indiana, believe it or not. Williams was known to improvise during his time in Marin's drama program, putting cast members in hysterics. Dunn called his wife after one late rehearsal to tell her that Williams was going to be something special. In 1973, the year my brother was born, in fact, Williams attained a full scholarship to the Juilliard School in New York City. He was one of only 20 students accepted into the freshman class and one of only 2 students to be accepted by John Houseman in into the advanced program at the school that year. The other was Christopher Reeve, William Hurt, and Mandy Pipkin. The Pipkin were also classmates. According to Gene Dorsville, classmate Franklin Seals was William's roommate at Gilliard's. Reeves remembered his first impression of Williams when they were two new students at Gilliard. He wore tie-dyed shirts with tracksuit bottoms and talked a mile a minute. I never seen so much energy contained in one person. He was an untied balloon that had been inflated and immediately released. I watched in awe as he virtually caromed off the walls of classrooms and hallways. To say that he was on would be a major understatement. I could definitely see that. We're not going to go clearly off the, you know, his college junior. Well, actually, we could. Just sit here and see what else we could talk about. Well, let's go with his career mainly. We know he went through school. We know he did stand-up comedy and acting. Let's talk a little bit about the stand-up comic. After his family moved to Marin County, Williams began his career doing stand-up comedy shows in the San Francisco Bay Area. In the mid-1970s, his first performance took place at the Holy City Zoo, a comedy club in San Francisco, where he worked his way up from tending bar to getting on stage. In 1960, San Francisco was the center for a rock music renaissance, hippies, drugs, and a sexual revolution. And in the 1970s, Williams helped lead its comedy renaissance, writes critic Gerald Machman. Williams says he found out about drugs and happiness during that period, adding that he saw the best brains of my mind turn to mud, a humorous paraphrasing of the opening of Al Howell by Allen Ginsberg. In the early 1970s, Williams worked as a mime and was photographed by Daniel Sorin while performing in 1974 in Central Park. He moved to the Los Angeles area and continued doing stand-up shows on various clubs, including the Comedy Club in 1997, where TV producer George Schlatter saw him, George Schlatter, realizing that Williams would be an important force in the show business, asked him to appear on a revival of his Laugh-In show. The show aired in the late 1977 and became the debut TV appearance. Williams also performed at the show at the L.A. Improv and at the same time and same year of the home box office. While the Laugh-In revival failed, it led Williams into a career in television, during which period he continued doing stand-up comedy at clubs such as the Roxy Theater in California to help him keep his improvisational skills sharp. Now, we understand that Robin Williams also had influences, early influences, rather, including Jonathan Winters, Peter Sellers, Nicole Sinead, and Lenny Bruce. He attributed their influence to their ability to attract a more intellectual audience by using a higher level of wit. Could be true. Yeah. He also liked Jay Leno for his quickness in ad-libbing comedy routines, and Sid Caesar, the acts he felt were precious. Jonathan Winters became his idol early in life. Williams first saw him on television at age 8. And paid him homage and interviews throughout his career. Williams was inspired by Williams' ingenuity, realizing, he said, that anything is possible, that anything is funny. He gave me the idea that it can be free form, and all you go in and out of things pretty easily. TOFI's live performance, Williams won a Grammy Award for the recording of his 1979 live show at the Copacabana in New York. Yeah, Copacabana, that's what it is. Reality, what a concept. Some of his later tours, after he became a TV and film star, including An Evening with Robin Williams in 1982. Robin Williams at the Met in 1986, and Robin Williams Live on Broadway in 2002. The latter broke many long-held records for the comedy for a comedy show. In some cases, tickets were sold out within 30 minutes of going on sale. In 1986, Robbins released A Night at the Met. After a six-year break in August of 2008, Williams announced a new 26-city tour titled Weapons of Self-Destruction. He said that this was his last chance to make jokes at the expense of the Bush administration, but by the time the show was staged, only a few minutes covered that subject. Tour started at the end of September 2009, concluded in New York on December 3rd, and that was the subject of an HBO special on December 8th, 2009. This is Jory Rowe, and you're listening to In Memorandum on American Psychosis Radio with host Jory Rowe. We're going to cut to a silent break for right now. When we come back, we're going to keep talking about Williams and also about his hardships in performing stand-up comedians, or stand-up comedy, I should say. So we'll be right back after a short silent break. Okay, this is Jory Rowe, and you're listening to In Memory Of, or In Memorandum Of, whichever way you want to take it. You take it for what it's worth. But we're doing a show tonight in memory of Robin Williams, a television actor and comedian. Hardships in performing stand-up. Williams said that partly due to the stress of doing stand-up, he started using drugs and alcohol early in his career. He further said that he never drank or took drugs while on stage, but occasionally performed when ill with a hangover from the previous day. During the period he was using cocaine, he said that it made him paranoid when performing on stage. Williams once described the life of a stand-up comedian. This is what Robin Williams did. I'm going to read you word for word everything that Robin Williams says as describing the life of stand-up comedians. Here it is. It's a brutal field, man. They burn out. It takes its toll. Plus, the lifestyle, partying, drinking drugs. If you're on the road, it's even more brutal. You got to come back down to mellow your ass out and then performing tasks that back you up. They flame out because it comes and goes. Suddenly they're hot, and then somebody else is hot. Sometimes they get very bitter. Sometimes they just give up. Sometimes they have a revival thing that they come back again. Sometimes they snap. The pressure kicks in. You become obsessed, and then you lose that focus that you need. How true could anybody ever be for saying, you know, something like that? This is word for word that came from the description of the life of stand-up comedians as portrayed by Robin Williams. Now, he did have a television career. After The Laugh-In, the revival and appearing in the cast of The Richard Pryor Show on NBC, Williams was cast by Gary Marshall and then as Alien Mork in the 1978 episode of the hit TV series Happy Days. Williams impressed the producer with his quirky sense of humor when he sat on his head when asked to take a seat for the audition. As Mork, Williams improvised much of his dialogue and physical comedy, speaking in a high nasal voice. Mork's appearance was so popular that it led to the spinoff of the hit TV sitcom, Mork and Mindy, which ran from 1978 to 1982. The show was written to accommodate Williams' improvisations. Although he portrayed the same character as in Happy Days, the series was set to be present in Boulder, Colorado, instead of the late 1950s in Milwaukee. Mork and Mindy, at its peak, had a weekly audience of 60 million and was credited with turning Williams into a superstar. But according to critic James Pony Luzik, the series was initially popular among young people as Williams became a man and a child, buoyant, rubber-faced, and endless gusher of invention. Very true about Robin Williams there. And we're going to go on to his film career, and then we got to get to the sad part. Williams' first film was the 1977 low-budget comedy, Can I Do It Till I Need Glasses? His first major performance was the title character in Popeye in 1980. Though the film was a commercial flop, the role allowed Williams to showcase the acting skills previously demonstrated in his television work. He also starred as the leading character in The World According to Garp, 1982, which Williams considered may have lacked certain madness on screen, but it had a great core. Williams continued with the other similar roles as less successful films such as The Survivors in 1983 and Club Paradise in 1986. Though he felt these roles did not help him in his film career. His first major break came from his starring role in the director of Barry Levinson's Good Morning Vietnam in 1987, which earned Williams a nomination for the Academy Award for Best Actor. The film takes place in 1965 during the Vietnam War, with Williams playing the role as Adrian Connor, a radio shock jock who keeps the troops entertained with comedy and sarcasm. But Williams was allowed to play the role without a script, improvising most of his lines. But over the microphone, he created voice impressions of people, including Walter Cronkite, Gomer Pyle, Elvis Presley, Mr. Ed, and the one and only Richard Nixon. We just let cameras roll, said producer Mark Johnson, and Williams managed to create something new for every single take. Many of his later roles were in his comedies tinged with pathos. Williams' roles in comedy and dramatic films garnered him an Academy Award for Best Supporting Actor for his role as a psychologist in Good Will Hunting, but as well as two previous Academy Award nominations for playing an English teacher at Dead Poets Society in 1989 and for playing Troubled Homeless Man in The Fisher King in 1991. And in the same year, he played the adult Peter Pan in the movie Hook, although he had said that he would have lost 25 pounds. Couldn't figure out how he would do something like that, but you know what? That's just the way it is. Now I'm going to get to a little bit of Robin Williams' personal life and talk about his marriages and children. There's so much to say about this man, we're not going to get it all into a one-half-hour show. So Williams married his first wife, Valerie Bilardi, in June 1978, including a live-in relationship with comedian Elaine Boozler. Bilardi and Williams met in 1976 while he was working as a bartender at the tavern in San Francisco. Her son Zachary, Tim Zach Williams, was born in 1983. Williams and Bilardi divorced in 1988, but on April 30th in 1989, he married Marcia Gersis, Zachary's nanny, who was pregnant with his child. They had two children, Zelda Ray Williams and Cody Allen Williams, born in 1991. In March 2008, Gersis suffered divorce from Williams, citing irreconcilable differences. The divorce was finalized in 2010. Williams married his third wife, graphic designer Susan Schneider, in October 22nd in 2011 in St. Helena, California. Williams stated, "My children give me a great sense of wonder. Just to see them develop into these extraordinarily human beings." That's something really nice to say. And he had other interests, as well as being a member of the Episcopal Church. He described his denomination comedy routine as Catholic life, same rituals, half the guilt. He has also described himself as an honorary Jew, and on Israel's 60th Independence Day in 2008, He appeared in Times Square along with several other celebrities to wish Israel a happy birthday. Williams became a devoted cycling enthusiast, having taken up the sport partly as a substitute for drugs. Eventually, he accumulated a large bicycle collection of his own and became a fan of professional road cycling, often traveling to racing events such as the Tour de France. Robin Williams was also a philanthropist. In 1986, Williams teamed up with Whoopi Goldberg and Billy Crystal to found Comic Relief USA, an annual HBO television benefit devoted to the homeless. And we're going to get, we're running out of time for this episode. We're down to, you know, like 4 minutes remain. So we're going to get to the addiction and the health problems and his death. And after that, we'll sum everything up and we'll see you next week. But let's get finished this show about Robin Williams, about his addiction and health problems. During the late 1970s and the early 1980s, Williams had an addiction to cocaine. I mentioned something about that earlier. He was a casual friend of John Belushi, and the sudden death of Belushi with the birth of his son, Zach, prompted him to quit drugs and alcohol. It was a wake-up call? Oh, yeah, on a huge level. The grand jury helped, too. Williams turned to exercise and cycling to help alleviate his depression shortly after Belushi's death. According to bicycle shop owner Tony Tom, Williams stated, "Cycling saved my life." In 2003, he started drinking alcohol again while working on the film The Big White in Alaska. In 2006, he checked himself into a substance abuse rehabilitation center in Newburgh, Oregon, saying he was an alcoholic. Years afterwards, Williams acknowledged his failure to maintain sobriety. He said he never returned to using cocaine, declaring in a 2010 interview, "No cocaine, paranoid and impotent. What fun. There's no bit of me thinking, ooh, let's go back to that. Useless conversations until midnight, waking up and going feeling like a vampire on a day pass. No." In March 2009, he was hospitalized due to heart problems. He postponed his one-man tour for surgery to replace his aortic valve. The surgery was completed on March 13, 2009 at the Cleveland Clinic. In mid-2014, Williams admitted himself into the Hazelman Foundation Addiction Treatment Center in Lindstrom, Minnesota, for treatment related to his alcoholism. His publicist, Mark Butzmom, commented that he was suffering from stress for his death. Williams' wife, Susan, stated that in the period before his death, he'd been sober, was diagnosed with early-stage Parkinson's disease, was not very ready to share publicity publicly. Now, he had Lewy body dementia, and it's a type of dementia that cannot be detected while you're alive, they say. They say you must be dead for them to do this test to see if you have it. So if you have it, you won't ever know in your life that you've had it, because the only way to test for it is after you're dead, which seems kind of very weird in medical science and breakthroughs. But hopefully the life and death of Robin Williams, everybody will have on their mind for a long time to come, and he'll keep people laughing for a long time to come, even though he's not with us anymore. But this is your host, Jory Rowe, and this is the show called In Memory Of, right here on American Psychosis Radio. We're out of time for now. We'll see you next Sunday on American Psychosis.